Welcome to the Metal Hammer Podcast. It's episode 39. I'm Mo and I'm here with Elle. Hi.
Hey.
How's it going?
Good. How are you?
I am good. Cheers. We're a twosome today. That's a bit weird.
It feels a bit strange,
doesn't
it? There's
a big void to my right-hand side at the moment because Luke Morton has taken a well-deserved holiday today. He'll be back next week. And it's not Halloween anymore. That's sad.
Yeah, but according to Ministry, every day is Halloween.
Oh, yeah. I was like, the Ministry of what?
Ministry.
I lost metal
Although,
points.
If there was a Ministry of Halloween, I would...
That would be amazing.
Yeah, I would work there.
Only really relevant for 1 month a year, but that would be pretty sick. Just because spooky season's over, though, that doesn't mean you shouldn't pick up the awesomely scary and horror-filled latest issue of Metal Hammer. It is a Rob Zombie guest edit. It's one of my favourite issues we've done this whole year. It's on sale right now. Halloween can go forever, as far as we're concerned. We also launched some very cool Rob Zombie bundles this week, as well as an exclusive cover you can only get on that bundle. You can also get a very badass art print commissioned by the man Rob Zombie himself. And it's only a tenner as well, so what a barg. Get onto metalhammer.com to find out all about that.
Did you just call it a barg?
A barg. That sounded cooler in my head than it actually is.
Oh, I do want one, though.
What else is going on? Oh, God, the Slayer horns. Hashtag Slayer horns. We want you to be on the cover of Metal Hammer in December. We are launching an absolutely massive, very, very cool Slayer tribute issue, and we want the fans of Slayer to be on it. So if you want to be on the cover of actual Metal Hammer magazine, send us your photos. That's all we need you to do. Throwing the horns, shouting Slayer, looking metal, looking cool, looking pretty, looking ugly, looking badass. We don't mind. Just send your photos in to metalhammer@futurenet.com or tweet us or Instagram them to us using the hashtag Slayerhorns. You, yes, you right there, can be on the cover of Metal Hammer in December. So send us your photos. You haven't sent me yours yet, Al. What's going on?
I'm just waiting for the right time.
The right time is now. Yeah, you've got about a week to get those in. So if you want to be a part of Metal Hammer history, you know what to do. I just told you, metalhammer@futurenet.com.
There have been some great ones as well. We've had a fetus.
Yeah, I know. Literally an unborn baby fetus. In an ultrasound scan thing. Throwing the horns literally in the room. How cool is that? Loads of metal babies, loads of metal grands, some metal pets.
Yeah.
It's been awesome. Thank you so much to everyone for the response so far. But we want more, so keep sending them in. What have you been up to? Apart from wearing a really cool spooky jumper.
Yeah, my ghost jumper.
It's amazing. It's basically, it's not like a Christmas jumper, but Halloween, it's literally just a big spooky ghost jumper Elle's got on.
Yeah, it's my favourite thing ever.
Badass.
Well, I went to see Turnstile on Friday.
Yes. How was that? Was it?
They played at the House of Vans.
Right, okay.
Which, for people who don't know, that is underneath Waterloo Station in London, under the old railway arches. So it's all brick, all subterranean, all quite spooky, actually.
It looks, yeah, it's a cool looking venue, isn't it?
It's a cool looking venue, and it should have been perfect for a band like Turnstile, because I got that whole skatey 90s thing going on, so it actually really suits them.
Mm.
But there were so many people there. It's not that big of a place. Well, it is. Basically, the actual place is big. There's kind of interconnected tunnels. They've got skate ramps. It's a really great space. But the actual venue itself, the room where they have the band, is not huge. And there were so many people, and it was just a bit of a nightmare. There were people on the sides who couldn't really get in the actual room, who were kind of hanging out in the side rooms. There were people trying to push through the crowd. I imagine if you're at the front, it was amazing, because it was kind of like seeing them in a small venue then, because it's quite narrow and cool. But I was towards the back, and it was just, yeah, it was not a great place to watch from.
That's interesting. Because Metallica played there, like, unbelievably, about, I don't know, 2 years ago or something, as one of their underplays.
They did, yeah.
And I don't remember, I mean, this is Metallica we're talking about, and I don't remember anybody saying that it was too busy there, so they really must have...
Yeah, and I saw Bring Me the Horizon there, and that was okay as well.
Oh, wow.
But it was just, I don't know what it was.
I was at that gig as well.
There were literally people everywhere. And some people you could tell had kind of decided to sort of like sack off the band and just sort of go in a side room. But mostly people were very hyped for it because, you know, Turnstile at the moment are quite a hyped band.
Yeah, and their live shows generally tend to be pretty nuts.
Yeah, they played well. They did a good live show. Like, the singer had his top off, going a bit crazy. Like, it was a good show, but it was one of these weird things where you felt like it would have been better in a smaller venue or just a venue where you could fit everyone in. But There were so many people there that you think they've got to play like somewhere pretty big next time they come around.
Yeah.
But then I don't know how that music and that performance is going to translate to a bigger stage. So it was a really weird one. It was like, yeah, you know, objectively they were pretty good, but it's just kind of a bit, it wasn't quite the right place or not quite the right crowd. Or
it's interesting what you say about the bigger stage, because I saw them at Rockville in Florida earlier this year, and they were playing on an outdoor festival stage, and it felt like there was a little bit, I mean they were great, but I felt like it was a little bit of a disconnect.
Yeah, it was an interesting crowd actually as well. It wasn't like a full on metal crowd. Obviously it was some people who were metalers who liked them because they liked the sort of 90s thing. And there were a bunch of people in their teens and 20s who are just well into the 90s aesthetic and had on their Kappa and Fila.
It's very
and,
in at the moment, isn't it?
Yeah.
If you actually grew up in the 90s, you feel old as hell right now, walking around watching teenagers in baggy, like, tie-dye t-shirts. And oh,
basically, everything in Urban Outfitters that people in the 90s wore as their school PE kits if they're trying not to wear the official school one.
We talked about the fact that you can get... Oh, what store was it in that has the Limp Bizkit?
Oh, is that Urban Outfitters?
It might have been Urban Outfitters. There's one of those high I mean, we're kind of used to seeing like Metallica t-shirts and Slayer t-shirts in fashion shops now, but now Limp Bizkit has officially become retro vintage.
Yeah.
It's like,
it said like vintage band t-shirt. So, yeah. But you know, there are people who are around now who are teenagers who weren't born when they came out. So that's the thing. But yeah, it was that kind of odd mixture as well. And Friday nights, so a lot of people were just out to get wasted and have a good time, and which is cool. But yeah, it was quite a funny one, bit of a funny atmosphere, kind of a different mixture of crowds and a venue with slightly too many people and a lot of hype. And yeah, I didn't not enjoy it, but I didn't love it. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely.
I sort of went, oh yeah, they played quite well. That was quite a cool
thing. Were you into
see.
The album, Time and Space?
Yeah, I thought that was great.
Yeah, it's a wicked album. Yeah. But yeah, interesting.
Every song is full of hooks, you know. It's just, they've all got that sort of catchy thing in that makes you latch onto them. And things like Generator sound really good.
Yeah, sure. We've been busy, believe it or not, we've been working on our albums of the year list at Hammer, and that Turnstile album is right up there in the mix as well. That'll be all revealed in a few months' time, of course. Big news this week, Bloodstock has made another announcement, more additions. Code Orange are playing Bloodstock.
Yeah.
Wow.
I know.
That is huge, isn't it?
Yeah.
What do you think of that?
Weird. But weird but good. Like, again, if we're talking about kind of mixing crowds and untraditional crowds,
yeah.
I wouldn't say that a Code Orange crowd is a Bloodstock crowd, but there is overlap. It's not, you know, it's just one of those things where they supported Gojira and went down really well,
yeah.
And they've been out with tons of heavy bands, and they reference tons of heavy bands.
They supported Out the Gates as well, I saw them.
Exactly, yeah. So, you know, it's not like there's not previous form there, but I think if you think of Bloodstock and you think of all the people that go there, you wouldn't necessarily pick Code Orange in their sort of top 10 bands.
Mm.
But I think it's going to go down really well.
I can't see it being anything other than absolute carnage. It's going to be great. I mean, the closest thing to something like this I can remember for Bloodstock is when Hatebreed got announced, and everyone was like, oh, yeah, Hatebreed, yeah, and they just absolutely wiped the floor with everyone that day. It's going to be awesome.
They're going to be coming out with fangs out. Is that a phrase? Claws out.
Fangs out.
Claws out.
It's still Halloween in our minds. Fangs out is fine.
Fangs out. They're going to have their fangs out and their claws out, and they're going to be looking for blood.
Definitely. The very best kind of bands are the ones that know what to do when you back them into a bit of a corner, and Code Orange will know that they're playing a proper metal festival, and I'm sure they'll be ready to just...
I really want to know who they're between, you know, who's on before and after, because that all sets the tone, and it's going to be quite weird to see if whoever, you know, if they've got like... if they've got before and after them, really, if it's going to be proper metal stuff or if it's going to be sort of a bit party.
Well, I mean, you only need to look at the other bands announced in this announcement for Bloodstock to see the kind of company they're going to be in, because they've got Skeleton Witch, who put out one of my favourite albums this year, Elevate, Folk Metal, Heavyweights, Rotting Christ as well, like proper extreme metal royalty. It's going to be a great year. Can't wait. And Scorpions are playing, so what more do you want?
Code Orange and Scorpions.
It's going to be ridiculous. August 2019, that will be, of course, tickets on sale now. And speaking of cool things happening, one of my favourite bands in the universe are back.
Who's that, Merle?
It's While She Sleeps.
Yay.
What do you think of Antisocial?
I love it, it's great. The first time I heard it, I just listened to it kind of catch it in, was like really drawn in because it's just got a lot of bounce and a lot of energy and a lot of aggression. I was like, oh, I just love songs like this. They just come out and just sound great, and it sounds very much like a single. But then you actually listen to the lyrics and it has something to say as well, and it's basically saying we're sick of all this shit in 2018 and the way things are. Have you seen the video?
I have. I just caught it today because, funnily enough, I spoke to Matt about it. Because I think the song is... It's weird because when you heard it, you were like, yeah, this is massive, it's a single. When I first heard it, I thought it was, like, not all over the place, but there was just so much going on. Like, it feels like the song evolves and switches, like, every kind of 30 seconds. It just goes down a completely different route, and I love it. Like, there's not really a recognisable chorus on it, I would say.
It's that massive breakdown bit.
Oh, I love that bit. Yeah, the big kind of, whoa, like, with the blast beats just going ham near the end. But I think it's great. And, yeah, and when I said that to Matt, he was like, you just wait till you see the video.
Yeah.
And the video's nuts.
It's really good. Do you know what it reminded me of? It reminded me of the antithesis of the London 2012 Olympic opening ceremony.
Ooh! Nice! I like what you're saying there.
But basically, if you didn't see that... I mean, I feel like that opening ceremony got everyone on board with the Olympics. He wasn't. Definitely did for me.
Danny Boyle's thing, wasn't it?
Danny Boyle's thing. Yeah. So he basically is very filmic. And Danny Boyle, obviously known for his films and social realism. And they had loads of performers coming out and, like, being the NHS and showing how good it was. And basically every single public service and things that make Britain good.
Yeah, yeah.
In a non-horrible patriotic way.
And then the Olympics ruined it by having Boris Johnson dance to the Spice Girls.
Yeah, let's move on from that. And so the ceremony was kind of celebrating all these things that are good about the society we live in. And While She Sleeps video, they've got them playing in the background. And then they have a series of vignettes, shall we call them.
Oh, nice.
Where they're going through kind of all these different bits of society and showing how fucked everything is. So you've got Loz at the table sort of pretending to be in this family. And there's a pig eating all the food on the table before the kids can get to it. They've got them all in hospital beds, and the NHS staff, like the nurses, and running around trying to, you know, help everybody in the beds, and they just can't reach everybody. They've got a couple of people sitting on a sofa inside the living room, and somebody's shot outside their house. Like, it's kind of like, you know, these things should all be good, happy, settled things, and they're not. They're unsettled at the moment. And it kind of does the social commentary thing without, I was going to say, without ramming it down your throat. It's very blatant and very overt, but it's not preachy. It's just kind of that feeling of, this is quite shit at the moment, really.
Yeah, I think
it's aggressive.
There's always this thing about, oh, bands don't have anything to say. While She Sleeps are a band with something to say. I've rarely empathised with and connected with kind of lyrics in the modern age like I do with what While She Sleeps have to say. I think it's a great song. The video's nuts. Looks like it was filmed, I would imagine, in their complex again, because it looks like it's in a similar kind of
big open space. Yeah, it is a big open space. I don't know whether
which is so cool. They just seem to do everything themselves. Matt and his brother edited the video.
That's cool.
And shot it and produced it and everything else. It's just great. A brilliant band.
You can tell there's a lot of love that went into that video, you know, that they've really, really thought about every single thing that goes into it. And I agree with you on the lyrics front. You know, they are a UK band and they're Northern, which makes me happy. And the stuff they're saying is stuff that you can relate to. They're normal people making music.
Yeah, and it's not posturing it. Like you say, it comes from a real place. Like, I think what I love about While She Sleeps is, like, you know, they're not just sitting there particularly rallying against one government or one set of politics or whatever. It's about the kind of, a lot of their stuff is about the kind of loss of identity and the loss of togetherness that I think a lot of people feel in Britain at the moment.
Yeah.
Whatever end of the political spectrum, really, to be honest. It's something that really touches me. I think it's they vocalise it in a way that not other bands are able to do. If you can hear a load of smashing and bashing in the background, by the way, I do apologise. There's some kind of construction chaos going outside the back of the Hammer office today. I don't know what's going on.
I think something might be being demolished or something.
Yeah,
you know?
The world not ending. There's just a building getting smashed up. I don't know what's happening. So the album is So What. That's coming out March 1st. Interesting, kind of evocative title there. So What? Is the album
title. Yeah, it's provocative, isn't it?
Definitely. The tour is also coming up in early 2019. And She Sleeps are headlining the Roundhouse.
It's going to be so
cool. So cool. That's like, what is that? 3,000 capacity? 4,000 capacity?
No, it's not that much. I've got a terrible memory, but it's...
It's something like... Anyway, it's a big London venue that I've seen people like Deadmau5 play. It's a big old building, and it's so cool to see them being able to jump up to a venue like that.
It's a great setting as well. It used to be...
Yeah, it's a beautiful venue.
What did it used to be? Like a...
It's a theatre.
No, but it was... In the past, it was something else. It was like a railway.
Yeah, that's it.
So it's really like...
I forgot about that.
Cool.
But yeah, that's the final date of the tour. But they do come right through the UK and Europe as well. So you can check out their tour dates. From a latest tour to a final tour, Elle. What else is going on?
Well, Kiss have revealed their final world tour and they're coming to the UK next July.
See, I would boo this normally. It's like, no, Kiss are breaking up. One of the greatest rock and roll bands ever. But to be blatant about it, I kind of feel like anyone that's seen Kiss in the last couple of years probably knew this was coming, and I kind of feel like it's a good time for them to bow out.
Yeah, I mean, I think I've said before, like, I'm not too fussed. You can't mess with Kiss's back catalogue. They've got some actual bangers.
No, you can't.
I saw them at Download like a decade ago or something and just wasn't really massively on board with it. I felt like then that whatever glory they had live had probably faded and I just wasn't...
And that's 10 years ago you're
talking
about.
Yeah, I wasn't fussed on it
at all.
Wow, so that,
that's interesting because
really,
I thought they were great at Download.
No, it really put me off.
Really?
Yeah.
I loved them at Download that year. I saw them then, because they didn't come over here for years, did they? And then they did... They did Download, and then they did like some play down shows and some big arena shows as well.
That year as well was
when, decent that year.
That year was when Download was set up very differently, and it was kind of like it was a very wide viewing area.
Yeah,
if that
it was.
Makes sense.
It was in between how it was originally set up and what it's become now.
It's sort
when
of
it had
like
the second stage was in the car park, wasn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, it's sort of like when a piece of paper is landscape instead of portrait. It was sort of like a long rectangle. And so maybe it was just that, you know, I was at a bit of the rectangle that didn't feel very close.
It wasn't a vintage year.
Now you feel like you're very close to headliners even if you're far away. There's something about the way it's set up which actually feels
no I know what you mean. It wasn't a vintage year. The Offspring headlined, I think Lost Prophets headlined. It was like not a kind of like classic all-time encompassing lineup by any means. But I like Kiss.
Yeah,
that year.
I'm not.
That said,
I like the iconography of Kiss. I like the songs. I think, you know, you can't mess with any of that. But I'm just not too fussed, to be honest. Sorry to be a downer.
That's all right. Well, as a Kiss fan, then, I've seen them be brilliant. I've seen them be all right, and I've seen them twice in recent years, and I didn't think they were particularly spectacular. I mean, if I'm being honest, Paul's vocals just don't cut it anymore.
Mm.
And he, to be fair to him, he's come out and said. He's actually said straight up, like, if you want to listen to me and hear me like I was in the 80s, you can go and listen to me in the 80s. No, I'm not stopping you. And I think that's a fair point. Like, the dude's, I think, 60-something.
Yeah.
He looks in unbelievable shape. I did actually interview him last year at Chicago Open Air, and he looks ridiculous. He just looks amazing. He looks like a superhero.
No, I know.
But vocally, not
every
quite.
Every single type of medical treatment and advisor and everything.
Yeah, absolute legend in the game. I'm a Star Child guy forever. I love Paul Stanley. But you know, it's their last tour. We know it's their last tour. It will still be one of the biggest shows in rock and roll. So I'm sure it'll be a jolly good time.
Yeah, you'll still have loads of fun if you go. I don't want to be the fun. What's it called?
No, you've ruined it now.
Oh.
Just in Kiss are cancelled because
no.
They're listening to this live conversation.
It'll be fun. It'll be a fun thing.
I think it's Kiss. You just got to go get bladdered if that's what you like to do and watch one of the greatest rock and roll bands ever. And if you don't like Paul's voice, sing louder than him.
You're
going to
do your face?
Maybe for the last ever one I will. Maybe. I haven't done it before, but maybe I'll do a Kiss makeup.
It's time.
I'll be the Pharaoh. No, I won't. Yeah, that was a rubbish one. on the website this week, metalhammer.com, by the way, fans, Hammer writer Stephen Hill wrote a piece defending Lulu by Metallica, one of the most controversial albums. I don't even know if controversial is the right word for it. One of the most panned albums ever released by a significant metal band. Turned 7 this week, the celebratory important age of 7. So Steve wrote a piece kind of defending it and... you know, trying to, I guess, give it a bit of a reappraisal and a reassessment about what Lulu is. And he basically talks about how the reason it suffered so much is because people treat it like a Metallica album. And they shouldn't treat it like a Metallica album because it's not a Metallica album. It's Metallica and Lou Reed. And he goes on to say that when Master of Puppets came out, it was a detonation in the metal scene. It scared people. It made people lose their minds. They didn't know what the hell they were listening to. You can't, similar to what we were just saying about Kiss, you can't expect... Metallica to do another Master of Puppets now, so they did something totally different and they did something that had the world talking and made the metal industry claw its hair out in horror. So it's an interesting read. You should definitely pop onto the website and check it out. What do you think? What was your first reaction when you heard Lulu for the first time?
I kind of went, I can't be bothered.
Really?
Yeah. I kind of went like, this is the kind of avant-garde style that I feel is very brainily abrasive.
What a phrase.
Yeah.
Sounds like a band name.
Yeah, I felt like it was just, you know, and I've not been fair to Lulu. I actually agree with Steve's piece. He basically says, have you looked at the plays it's based on? Have you actually done the research?
Yeah, that's and true. I, yeah, it was great. It's a high concept album as well.
I haven't, really, you know. I kind of went, here's Lulu, I'll listen to it. It kind of sounds cool for what it is. You can tell they're all really into it. And it sounds quite jammy, almost like they're all in a room just like going, yeah, fuck, this is awesome.
Yeah.
And it's legendary artists together. But I kind of went, well, you know what? This isn't really for me. I'm just kind of going to move on from it. I didn't particularly, you know, I wasn't one of those people that was going around saying, this is the worst thing ever. It literally makes me want to die or anything. I was just kind of like, you know what? This isn't really for me.
Mm.
And like I said, I agree with Steve's piece. I've never read the plays. I've never studied the lyrics and the plays together and kind of worked out.
Lulu plays by German playwright Frank Wedekind, and I definitely didn't just read that straight off.
You know, I've never done that. I've never sat down and done a deep dive into it and gone, you know what, I'm going to unpick this and find out where they're coming from emotionally. I kind of just listened to it and went, it's not really for me, I'm just going to move on. So now I've read that piece by Steve, maybe I will go back and actually read the plays and actually, you know, maybe I get something out of it.
Mm. I mean, I tried to go back to it. It's not on Spotify. and I don't own it. Maybe I might have a CD of it somewhere, actually. But I don't,
that's
I don't
what happens
own it
when yet. We rely on streaming too much and the apocalypse comes, we have no music.
I know. You know what? I thought about that the other day.
Yeah.
We won't do this now, but that's one for a late night. Like, yeah, man. Like, but seriously.
When the zombies come and
I know,
we have no music.
It did make me think, wow, sometimes you just can't. I have no way of listening to this album. So I listened to it on YouTube, like the kids do these days, and I still think it's shit.
It just, like I said, it's brainly abrasive to me. I'm just sticking with that phrase because it doesn't, even though it's a made up word, it does actually encapsulate how I feel.
Yeah, I know what you mean. I mean, it's a weird one because I think most people can at least agree with Lulu that if you dissect it and you take out its various parts, there's some good stuff on there. Like, it's got some really good riffs. Even The View, which is the much derided single that has James Hetfield screaming at
the table.
Like, there's some great riffs on that. Some really like slow, doomy ones that you wouldn't probably normally find on a Metallica album in of itself.
Yeah, I get that. And I know exactly which ones you're thinking of as well when you say that.
Yeah, so it's a weird one. It's not a good album. It's bad. I'm not a big Lou Reed fan. Someone on the podcast did actually say, what do Lou Reed fans think of Lulu, which is quite interesting because that's not really a perspective I've heard.
My parents are Lou Reed fans, so I've never played it to them, so maybe I should go and play it to them and go, what do you think of this?
Because you never know, they might be like, oh, it'll be good without all the metal on it. Like, you just don't know. But
they said they went and watched him and he was really wasted and they had chicken in a basket because that's what you did in the north and when they were watching him or whatever.
That's quality. Shout out the Goodmans. Yeah, it's just a weird one. I think that there's loads of good riffs on it. Hetfield vocally sounds pretty good on it. It's just, you can't, I don't know who's listening to this and listening to Lou Reed ramble on and just sound like it's kind of that rubbish. What do you call those drums that you hear like that?
Bongo drums.
Bongo, yeah, like dude in a beret tapping a bongo drum outside a park somewhere doing like slam poetry. It's just not.
His voice does get to me in a bad way. But again, I wonder, you know, if you can acclimatise to that, if you really commit to it. Because you can kind of get things out of most things if you actually really try.
Mm. And the thing is, with Metallica, they do my head in because I want to support... I do support everything they do because they're still, even now, a band that will just go, screw it, we're going to do this. We're not going to do what you expect of us. We're going to do what we want to do and we're going to do something that's almost certainly going to piss off a lot of critics and cynics. But we could do it anyway. And I really value the fact that they just went, you know what? We're going to hang out with Lou Reed, who's our personal hero, and just make something utterly ludicrous.
I spoke to Lars, and I can't remember exactly what he said, but it was something
about
like...
About Lou?
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
It was something like... I was going to do his voice then, but I'll do it so badly.
Yeah, the thing you've got to understand, Eleanor, is...
It's like something like, you know what, Eleanor? If your heroes came up to you and said, do you want to make a record, like, you would do it, basically.
Yes.
And, you know, you
Absolutely.
Would.
Absolutely. You really, really would. And I don't know. They played some songs off a few times. I remember they got Lou up with them on stage at the their 30th anniversary shows in San Francisco in 2011, I think it was. So they played it live a few times, but I mean, The View is just not a song you're ever going to want to. You're not going to get very many cheers at Metallica show if they're going to be like, "We're going to do The View." You know, it's not going to happen.
But I do feel like I do agree with Steve. I do feel like I've done it a disservice in not actually doing a deep dive.
Yeah.
And I actually think I will now, because I kind of want to know what I'm missing.
I agree, and I'm going to do it as well. Like I said, I kind of after I read Steve's piece, I did go back to it and revisit it briefly.
Where do we get these plays from then, Merle?
The plays. Well, if you
want
to quickly click on the link that I definitely don't have to hand right now.
How many do we need to read? We need to start the Metal Hammer Book Club to read these plays.
Oh, what a nice idea. There's basically a whole... It's a series of plays. Oh, no, it's two plays. Two plays.
That's manageable.
Two plays called The Lulu Plays, as I said, by Frank Wiederkind, who I might have mispronounced, from the kind of 1900s.
Right. I think we should do it.
Well, no. All right, that's our homework. No, I'm not gonna commit to this. Sorry, we're very busy at the moment.
Why don't we just say in the next 6 months?
Okay, in the next 6 years, we will definitely sit down and read the Lulu plays. But you know, I guess the point is that I think Steve's piece is really worth a read, and I think it's always worth rethinking any piece of art, because you never know what you might get for it if you revisit it another time. So. And like I said, there's some really good riffs on there. I would love to hear Metallica utilise some of that kind of sound on a fully-fledged Metallica album. And anyway, the next thing they did was Hardwired to Self-Destruct, which is an absolute killer of a record for the most part. So, fair bloody play to them.
Mm. Anyway,
you look pensive. Do you not agree?
No, I just zoned out for a second, sorry.
Oh, okay.
it was your soothing voice.
Yeah, definitely. I'm the Barry White of metal. Let's take some reader questions.
Shall we?
From facebook.com/metalhammerreaders. I nearly screwed it, but I didn't.
Well done. Duncan Everson asks, I was just wondering if you had thought about doing a feature on Gary Newman.
Yeah, we had a big. There's a big discussion about this on the Metal Hammer Readers group.
There is.
Gary Newman, a kind of like industrial, I guess, synth 80s legend.
Yes.
And we've had some requests to do a feature on Gary Newman in Metal Hammer.
Yeah.
Thoughts?
I really like his last record, actually.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I didn't listen to it.
So it's called Savage, and it's got this song called My Name is Ruin on it, and it's an awesome song. It's like a dark industrial goth song, and it's exactly the kind of thing I like. And I kind of overlooked it. I only actually listened to it probably about 3 months ago, and just really enjoyed it and listened to the whole album and kind of went back through some of his back catalogue. And he's kind of one of those figures that I'm always aware of and know is good and has some really good material, but don't often stop and do a deep dive, you know, the same way as Lulu. And I just really like that record, Savage, and there's a period of 2 weeks where I just played it every day. And so I agree with Duncan that that's a very good record, because I think he kind of was saying, you know, he's done some really good recent stuff. He's not just some kind of dude from the past.
Mm.
Yeah, I'd like to hear what he's got to say in some fashion. And yeah, like I said, I didn't really give him enough time until a couple of months back. And then I went shopping in All Saints and heard him on the stereo, which is quite funny.
Oh, really?
Thought, yeah, that was their music.
Well, from the new album? Or?
Yeah, the new record. They're playing it in
All
Saints.
Shout out whoever was running the stereo that day.
I know, that's what I thought.
Amazing.
I felt a bit like a stereotype there, because I actually bought a black t-shirt and Gary Newman was on, and I'm like, oh dear.
That's all right. I'm fully in on
a fancy
that. We talked about Top Man doing metal t-shirts, and I have to say, I know it's bad, but I'm fully in on all that stuff.
It was a fancy black
t-shirt.
Really
nice.
I was treating myself.
Good for you.
Yeah.
Michael Perry. So I know very little about Gary Newman. Do you know a good album to start on him?
No. I think I'm still exploring, really. But that last one, Savage, definitely. It just sounds really modern and really good.
I need to get on that. Knowledgement? I just made a word up. That was terrible.
Yeah, I made one up here.
Fucking hell, I'm going to go home and rip up my English degree for that. My knowledge of Gary Newman is pretty limited to when he made the appearance on Cars with Fear Factory, which was just a straight out cover of his own song.
But no, I mean, like I said, I'm sort of having to go back now and listen to things and educate myself on him. You know, maybe it's just that thing where he occupies a niche and he has fans there.
Yeah.
And maybe there aren't many mainstream outlets or whatever, or people really talking about him, or maybe I just missed it all. So,
well, let us know as always on the Metal Hammer Readers page, facebook.com/Metal Hammer Readers, if there are any other kind of slightly out of the ordinary artists you'd like us to cover, where it could be, you know, edgy hip hop artists, like industrial synth pop. I think it's really interesting when people pitch this kind of stuff at us, and it's definitely stuff we take on board. So maybe you'll see Gary Newman in the Page of Metal Hammer one day. Michael Perry says, while I do like Code Orange, I don't quite understand the level of hyperbole around them. What bands have failed to live up to the hype for you guys?
I've got one.
Go on.
Gallows.
There's going to be some angry punks listening to this right now. Gallows, really?
Yeah.
Go on then.
I mean, yeah, they've got a live show, but just didn't connect with it.
That, yes, that band does have a live show. That's very incisive comment.
Just, I don't know, not for me.
You saw them live and stuff though, right?
Yeah, I've seen them live a few times.
Oh, okay.
And I was like, everyone's having a nice time, I'm a bit nonplussed.
Oh, interesting. That is a big one. The one that came to mind for me, and I think this is slightly different because I love the band, I just feel like they've got nowhere near where they should have been given the hype they got, and that's King 810, which we kind of talked about quite a lot.
I really like them.
I like them. So far, to me, they've put out two wicked albums. I think David Gunn's a really interesting character. I think all the tools are there, but we went massive on them when they first broke a few years ago, and if you look at the other bands that have just kind of come through the door since, King 810, still feel like they're a bit in the dust a little bit compared to everyone else.
Yeah, I mean, they struggled, haven't they, with like member changes and things.
Yeah, totally. It's not all on them at all. It's just,
and it, I don't know, I mean, if you go with the fact that they have this narrative of coming from a difficult place and Flint and everything, then it kind of seems like they are going against the odds. But yeah, I mean, every time they come over, something's slightly wrong. Either they can't get here, or they've got to come over without one of their band members, or they have to cancel. So it always just seems a little bit like, you know, yeah, like it's not ramping up enough, and you kind of, but the albums are so good. I love the records.
Yeah, they're amazing, and way more subversive and interesting and deep than people give them credit for. I think a lot of idiots basically think they're just some kind of dumb metal band from like post Insane Clown Posse films or something, but no, they're not
about,
that at
they
all.
Talk about philosophy and social theory and all kinds of things actually when you dig down to it, but it's got that awesome like and heaviness that and that like really kind of, what's that noise, like they're just more downtuned than downtuned.
That sounds like a
Rob Zombie song.
More downtuned than downtuned. And like the last album had like jazz on it, it had blues, like there was loads of stuff going on. They're such a great band, but you know, I think we'll be the first to hold our hands up and say we hyped the shit out of them because we were really excited about them, and they've definitely not quite reached their potential yet, but there's still time for them. I think they're doing stuff.
I've got another one.
Go on.
The Gaslight Anthem.
Oh yeah, you hate those guys, don't you?
I don't hate them. It was more like, you know, I was buying magazines and excuse me, I like heavy music, and suddenly people started hyping them up and putting them on magazine covers and all that kind of thing. And I was like, it's not heavy music. It's just a band who kind of plays some songs. Like, I don't really know why you think I would like this.
They're probably a bit too far into a side of the rock spectrum where I don't dip into enough anyway. But I don't really see where they comfortably fit. The Weekly put them on the cover, didn't they, without having ever covered them before. It was like a big deal.
Yeah.
They're a funny one, guys. I mean, I think they're great. I just think all their stuff sounds the same, but I like it. It's kind of like watered down Bruce Springsteen-y kind of working man blue collar kind of anthems, and you know, mixed up with a bit more of a modern kind of light punky sound. But I like it. But and to be honest, I can't see why people really love them, because they're like, they're classic, like, oh, I empathise with this because it's just about, you know, life and stuff, and I get that. But
talking
about, I'm
talking about hype bands though. To me, that was just like, it was all hyped up, and I was like, "Oh, this is exciting!" And then heard them, and I was like,
"Yeah, fair." One that just came to mind that everyone's banging on about at the moment: Greta Van Fleet. I'm bored of them, and I've barely taken time to listen to the album.
I feel the same. I've heard so much about them now, and I'm like, I just not really bothered.
I mean, fair play to them. You know, if you're in a position where you feel like you have to have some kind of take on a band because everyone's got a take on a band, you know that someone's done a great job in pushing this band out there, and they must be doing something right to everyone talking about them. But to me, it feels like everyone's like, you have to eat, they're either like the worst thing that's happened to music because they're ripping off Led Zeppelin and they're a disgrace and they're just also-rans and they're getting away with murder because they're not original at all. Or they're revitalising rock and roll and they're bringing rock and roll in its true spirit back to the main stage and blah, blah, blah. And I just think it can just be somewhere in the middle.
Like, I don't have an opinion about it.
They're
I literally
okay.
have no opinions about it. I think
it's all right. Like, it's really Led Zeppelin-y and I don't think it's particularly earnest, but that's fine. I listen to loads of bands that just rip off other bands, and that's nothing wrong with that. But
you know what,
yeah, it's all right, you know. It's
anyone
all right.
making something and creating something, you know. Having said I don't like some of the bands that I feel were too hyped, like fair play, whatever. Like, you know, go out and create something, go out and do something. People
yeah,
don't
totally.
Like it. People don't like
they
it.
They
like,
do. They write more songs, you know, than I am. So
exactly. And I think anyone who wants to go out and create something should just go and put it out there, and you know, people can say what they like, can't they? But they're not the ones doing it at the end of the day. So
absolutely.
Well, Paul Terry asks, who's the best symphonic metal band of all time? Ah, oh, I bet we agree on this.
The correct answer is Within Temptation.
That's the answer I also
yeah,
was going to give.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. I do really like Nightwish as well. I think they've done some amazing stuff. But to me, just purely based on how good the songs are, and I think Within Temptation just write brilliant rock songs.
Yeah.
And a lot of it is under the symphonic metal banner for sure, especially like early stuff like Mother Earth and Ice Queen and The Promise and Angels and all that stuff, which is great. To me, the best example of that genre. But they've also evolved constantly in a way I think a lot of other bands haven't as much. And yeah, I just think they're brilliant. I think Sharon's awesome front woman and they're just cool as hell. And that's why we put them on the cover this year.
I think they just write really good dark pop songs. It's actually quite hard to write a good pop song, and they just
yeah,
do it
definitely.
Over and over and over and over again. But
that song,
have that edge on it.
Sinead off of The Unforgiven. If someone like Kelly Clarkson came out with a song like that, everyone would be losing their minds about it. But because it's Within Temptation, it's just a totally different demographic. It didn't
yeah.
touch outside their own bubble, really.
Yeah.
But yeah, brilliant band. Really looking forward to that gig at Brixton coming up as a part of their
Me
UK
too.
Tour. Hammer sponsored UK tour, by the way. Hell frickin' yeah. Who do you think the next big British metal band is? We're not allowed to count Bring Me the Horizon or Architects, according to Michael Maggot Soldier Jolly. That can't be your real name. That's not a tweet name either. That was from the Facebook group.
I really hope someone's called Michael Maggot Soldier Jolly.
So Mr. and Mrs. Soldier Jolly gave their loving son Michael the middle name Maggot. So hard. Sorry if that is your real name. Uncle Merlin, don't worry about it. Who is the next big British metal band?
I don't know. I mean, we just spoke about While She Sleeps, and I think we've said in the past how it's a bit of a shame with them because a lot of us had vocal problems and they sort of missed
yeah.
a bit of a window to kind of get a bit more traction. But, you know, they're making up for it now and they've got a great record coming out, we think. We've not heard it yet, but the song's great. So, you know,
that wasn't a cover, by the way. We generally haven't heard it.
Just my stupid voice saying stupid things.
That's all right.
I don't know. Who's the next biggest metal band?
I mean, Sleeps, I think, post-Architects, I think Sleeps were the band everyone put their flag in.
Yeah.
Like, when This Is The Six came out, everyone was like, this is it, this is the band. They played some festival slots that had everyone going mental. They did that tour where they had, like, Crossfaith and, I think, Bleed From Within supporting them. What bill that was. And it was all really exciting. Everyone knows the rest of the story. Brainwashed kind of threw them off course because it took so long to come out. Feel like You Are We put them back on it again. And to be honest, if you told me 2 years ago that While She Sleeps would even be headlining the Roundhouse, I'd be a bit cynical of that. And so that's awesome. That's a big, that is a really significant London. Cohen and Cambria just played there, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's like big established bands play places like that. So hopefully they've got a chance. One that I think we all take for granted, including you and me, even though we really rate them, is Buried Tomorrow.
I'm obsessed with that last record.
Yeah, it's really good.
It's great.
Well, they just consistently put out great albums. I mean, the last album was great. Earthbound, I thought, was a classic modern metal album.
Buried Tomorrow, yeah. I mean, Black Flame, like I was just saying. I kind of stopped listening to it for a couple of months and then put it back on again, like, the weekend before last, and I've listened to it most nights since, and actually woke up this morning like singing the song in
yeah.
my head and stuff. They're really good at writing. We're saying Within Temptation, they're really good at writing sort of very hooky songs, and you know what you're going to get. They do metalcore and they do it really well, and if you like metalcore, they're your band.
Definitely I totally agree. And I think what I really really respect about them is that they've never been the band that anyone kind of brand or magazine or website or anybody has really kind of put their flag behind, you know what I mean? Like, While She Sleeps, you know, we did a special limited edition cover run with them. hyped the shit out of them. I think they were on a Hammer Razor tour once many years ago. We gave away their debut album and stuff. You know, Architects have been on our cover, they've been on various other covers around the rock industry. Buried Tomorrow have never really been that band. They've never been the hype band, and yet out of really solidly just getting their heads down and just putting out great music and just working hard and building their craft, they've headlined the Forum in London two tours running, which is a 2,000 capacity venue. You know, they got 36 Crazy for supporting them on this next one. That's like a hallmark metal band for our scene, and they're supporting Buried Tomorrow. It's great. So you never know. I don't know what really constitutes big in today's world for metal, but
yeah.
I think they've got as good a shot as anyone have, and I'd be really stoked for them if they did it.
Me too.
Go on. You do it.
I was going to read the question. TJ Crazy Chemist asks. That's TJ Crazy Chemist asks.
I was going to say, we're just going to let that go.
Beside Rammstein and Manson sex toys, what are the weirdest merchandise items a band has put out?
Ghost butt plug was a classic.
Everything Kiss has done. Kiss caskets.
Yeah, that's always a classic as well. I'm pretty sure, I know a ton of bands have done them, but I'm pretty sure Hammerfall did condoms years ago.
JLS did condoms.
You just wouldn't risk it, would you?
I mean, no. Like, I don't trust...
Unless it was like Durex approved.
I would not trust band condoms. It just feels like... No. I don't know. Like you said, I'm sure they're all fine and approved. And it just feels a bit wrong.
What's on it? Does it mean you've got a member of JLS just like on your wang and you're just looking down at it as they're about to like go to town? Like, surely that's a boniker, literally. Like, come on, man.
I don't know. I don't think they have the members actually printed on there. It's just on the box, isn't it? You can get your favourite member.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. What if they did? Like, you'd have to pick your favourite member and you'd panic because you'd be like, oh, what if the person I'm sleeping with like is judging me because I went with, don't know their names, Ricky instead of John.
It's also like a bit of a
cuss. I don't know, I'm stuck on JLS out of all the
bit bags, of a cuss but... on your partner because you're like, oh yeah, I'll just go and get some condoms. I'll get these ones featuring the guy that I fancy, yeah. Which isn't you, but I'm just going to pretend it's you.
Orcs. Very orcs. What else is there outside of sex stuff? I can't really... speaking of weird merch, I got sent a Nicolas Cage pin this week. That was pretty cool.
That's amazing.
Mandy, which has just come out on DVD. We talked to Nicolas Cage in the new issue of Metal Hammer, of course. You really should read that interview because it's nuts. The guys that are promoting Mandy sent us a cool little pack, and it came with a Nicolas Cage enamel pin.
It's so, that's pretty cool. So good.
It's literally just his bloodied face.
Yeah, but the expression on his face is brilliant. It's just such a great pin.
So good. So, I mean, promotional stuff always comes up with great ideas for merch. I have to say, our sister magazine, Total Film, who we share an office with, they seem to always be getting like the most ridiculous cakes, and
they got a Meg. They got like several giant cuddly toy Megs.
Oh yeah, like a Meg
and
for the shark movie.
I really wanted to take one home.
Was it like a sleeping bag?
Yeah, but they were literally like the size of a sofa, and I wanted to take one home really, really badly. And they had some spares, and in the end, I didn't end up doing it because it literally would take up half my flat. But yeah, I'm really sad about it now because they were so good.
Love it. I love it. I mean, we've done some ridiculous stuff on Metal Hammer. We've done like cardboard. Cut out baby metal masks, Fox Club masks.
Pop-up
Papa. Oh, yeah, we did a pop-up. Sorry, I thought, yeah, we'd done a few ghost things. Yeah, we did it. We did a papal hat. What do you actually call that?
Papal hat.
I can't remember. It's on the tip of my tongue. But the big Papa hat, we did one of them. As I said.
A meter, yes.
We did a meter once. We did a pop-up Papa. A few years ago, that was good fun.
You could put a little candle behind him and
Burn him.
Maybe in your house.
Oh no,
pyro.
He'd send his ghouls out to get me.
Yeah.
Big fan. I mean, cassette tapes are kind of a weird merch item now because who can play those? Like, really? Unless you've got a car from 1989.
I like the Mastodon bikini.
Astodon.
Yeah, it had Astodon on the bun.
Yeah, that was a good one.
Quite fancy one of those.
I just love, to be honest, they're not weird in of themselves, but enamel pins, I love them. More bands, please do enamel pins because I'll buy them all. That's a request.
So there's just something about them, isn't there, that just makes them cool.
Freaking badass. We should do some Metal Hammer ones.
Yeah.
Let's do some Metal Hammer dildos. No one would buy them. That is all for this week. We're going to Slayer this weekend. That's going to be big.
Yeah.
Slayer's, I'm pretty damn sure their last ever London show. Last ever full UK tour. I believe, no reason to know why they'll do another UK tour again. It's going to be huge. Very excited about that. Lamb of God supporting as well, alongside Anthrax and Obituary. We'll be reviewing that right on this podcast next week. Don't forget to pick up your Rob Zombie bundle if you haven't yet. You get the magazine with an exclusive cover and an exclusive art print commissioned by Rob Zombie himself. The issue itself is still out in the shops. And send us your Slayer horns. You've got about a week left to do it. You could be on the cover of Metal Hammer with us idiots.
Horns up for Slayer.
Horns up for Slayer.
Horns up for Slayer.
Hashtag
horns
Slayer horns.
Up for Slayer.
Don't confuse them.
I'm sorry. Slayer horns.
Slayer horns. Slayer horns. Rate Slayer us on horns. iTunes and Acast. And don't forget, if you want a different way to listen to us, we're now on Spotify as well. How cool
Slayer
is
horns.
That? Slayer horns. Hashtag Slayer horns.
Hashtag Slayer horns.
See you next week.
Hashtag Slayer horns.
Slayer horns.